This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with me, Roshan, Chuang, and Noel. And in about 15 minutes, we're bringing you the KLCI opening numbers, as well as some of the latest corporate news. We've also got a poll running on Twitter right now. Do you agree with allowing more sectors to operate during the MCO? Let us know what you think. Right now, it depends on the sector in the lead with 42% of the vote, and no's with 32% of the vote, and yes with clear SOPs at 24%. Now, speaking of voting, let's take a look at South Korea. South Korea will be the first major country to undergo elections during the COVID-19 pandemic on Wednesday. Early voting already began last Friday in efforts to minimize congestion at the polls. And this will be interesting because this is the first major economy to do so, or the first economy to do so, a country to do so, and could be a barometer for what to expect going forward.
Yeah, the first to do so during a middle of a pandemic. So who's running? The incumbent president, Moon Jae-in, of the Democratic Party of Korea. So they are currently control 43% of seats in the assembly, and so and former Prime Minister Lee Nak-yong, who's aged 67 years old, he is the leading contender as Moon's preferred successor. But they are also to some extent facing some stiff competition from the United Future Party, the main opposition coalition.
Yes, of course, there's going to be a slew of new parties in the picture. There's a feminist party, there's going to be a North Korean defector party, even an environmental party among the 37 groups registered. I guess the question really is, even in the midst of the COVID pandemonium, not even the pandemic, why is this election going on?
Yes, I think it's interesting to see, especially in a region where, I mean, it's easy to use this as a reason to maintain control, right? Especially with President Moon has had his own issues. So for more on this, we speak to Dr. Nuraliana Kamarudin, Senior Lecturer at the Asia-Europe Institute of University of Malaya. Thank you for joining us this morning, Doctor. Now, before the pandemic, it was looking to be a very tight contest as voters may have been dissatisfied with President Moon's party over the state of the economy. Has the positive handling of COVID-19 given the Democratic Party possibly an edge here?
Definitely so. And I think that's a big part of why they are going through with the election, that it's time to be riding the good wave. And if you're going to talk about satisfaction, dissatisfaction towards the ruling government right now, it really isn't just a matter of economics. There's been a lot of other political issues as well as social issues that the government has just been seen as either failing or not doing enough to deal with. So definitely how the government responded initially at the early parts of the pandemic was criticized, but the rally together after that has been very widely praised throughout South Korea and now globally as well.
So in terms of outcomes, what is your prediction? I know the Democratic Party and its ally has about 128 seats. The opposition side has about 112 seats. So what do you expect in terms of number of seats or in terms of the gap in results?
Truth be told, this election is going to be very difficult to predict. Not just because, of course, like polls show you one thing, but this is the first time that South Korea will be having an election where they also have seats that will be based on proportional representation. So it's really not just a matter of how many seats that get directly elected. Then you also have seats that will be appointed to based on the proportional representation, which means there will be a lot of chances for smaller parties such as the Chungidan, which is the Justice Party, or the Minjudan, the People's Party. And as you pointed out earlier, there's a few other parties that have been formed, a feminist party. There's also the Green Party. The problem with that, of course, is that with the proportional representation, the current conservative parties have also broken up and made other satellite parties in order to expand their chances of winning seats. And the Democratic Party has also followed suit to do that. So it's really not just a matter of these two big parties, but also within these parties, they also have their own satellite parties in order to take advantage of the new system. So popularity-wise, yes, Democratic parties, I think the last poll from Gallup had shown about 40%, but you will see that there's a lot of number of people who are still undecided. So honestly, if you ask me for my prediction, I really don't have any. It's going to be an election that I'm excitedly watching.
Well, Dr. Liana, for the fan sitters out there, in terms of campaigning, you know, other than the corruption issues and economy issues, how might campaigning and the messaging there alter, especially in light of what's happening with COVID-19?
Of course, I think there's been a lot of concerns about this, that the COVID-19 issue has pretty much overtaken all other issues. It's either how do we deal with the pandemic or what are we going to do economically after that to recover from the pandemic? What are the fiscal policies that's going to happen in order to help the country tide its way over? But that's not to say I think people haven't quite forgotten. Definitely people have not completely forgotten all the other issues. Like you said, political scandal issues, the issue that came in 2019 right before the pandemic was the big one, was the reformation of the prosecution, where the Minister of Justice also then fell to issues of scandal of him helping his daughter into university. So that's already one big issue that had huge protests happening last year. But then you also have other areas, like right now, earlier this year, one big case they had was the issue of cybersecurity and gender equality, where they found the Nth Room chat group dealing with online prostitution non-consensual pornography, you know, the issue of the sex education reform in South Korea, issue of cyberbullying, and this new school area law as well, pointed out by my friend about how much responsibilities do drivers have in accidents throughout entire school areas. Of course, economically, there's a lot of issues that the minimum wage law that was passed was quite controversial. The plans to reform property taxes, right? That's also been highly debated. So definitely a lot of issues will come to mind, but I won't be surprised if the COVID-19 issue does not become like a defining issue for most voters or for the parties themselves. And that has been the focus of most of their campaign pledges and promises too.
So let's talk about the UFP then, the United Future Party. Tell us a little bit about their leader, Hwang Kyo-en. And does he enjoy a wide approval of the voters? What's his standing in South Korea right now?
This one is also another difficult question. Hwang Kyo-en is—he's a seasoned politician. He was former prime minister under the Park Geun-hye administration. He's had long time support with the conservative parties, but altogether, I wonder if that's enough to sway at least for the younger generation voters. And it's he runs very old school style politics, and I think a lot of people like that about the fact that they see him as a straight shooter. He's also been down on the ground with the protests last year, so he does have a lot of popularity and support among those who are definitely proper conservatives. But how much of his popularity compared to the current Democratic Party, I would say I think Lee Nak-yong, the candidate, is actually right now enjoying better popularity standings comparative to Hwang Kyok, to former Prime Minister Hwang. So he's an interesting character to look at, definitely.
Okay, so can I summarize this as you think it's likely that the Democratic Party will come back to power? Simply because of the handling of the COVID, you know, they've received a lot of positive feedback on that.
This is probably the election that has been hardest to predict comparative to a lot of the other elections that South Korea has had. And then, of course, since this is the legislative, the National Assembly legislative election, like, even if the Democratic Party doesn't win, Moon Jae-in still has a couple of years, and losing the National Assembly would, you know, threaten his position as a president, or, you know, either make him have a very successful second term, or second half of the term, since they only have one term, versus becoming a lame duck presidency. So it is important for the Democratic Party to win, but to summarize on my side, I really find it difficult to make a prediction at the moment.
All right, on that note, thank you so much for joining us on the line this morning. That was Dr. Nurlana Kamarudin of University of Malaya. And I didn't realize how scandalous South Korea was.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
And also just how uncertain this election is. I mean, before it was one thing, and now there's just so many factors at play here.
Yeah, so you know what I like about South Korea, right? If any of their presidents or prime ministers or even any of the major GLC sort of heads, right? If any of them have any corruption scandals, they have gone to jail. You know, it's not like they are untouchable. So I think that's one thing good about South Korea. But it's interesting that it's going to be very unpredictable on who's likely to win.
Yeah, and of course, their response in terms of the COVID-19 really has been quite amazing, because they are well on the way to recovery along with China. Obviously, the big difference between those two countries is that you can somehow almost believe what South Korea says, which is not as much as I can say for the Chinese data that comes out. But in terms of the corona curve, South Korea is on their descent.
All right, and on that note, we're going into a few messages and then the 9 a.m. news, where after that, we'll be taking a look at the KLCI opening as well as some corporate news. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.